Hi guys.
Hi.
Welcome to Forest School Podcast on number 5. We're here in the woods. Yeah, it's been a weird week because this is the first time that I've been in this week.
And you've come in a very interesting mood, I'd say.
Yeah. I've brought an interesting energy to the woods. It's very...
What's the book you've been listening to?
Oh, Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, I talked to someone actually about it on the Forest School, on the Facebook group the other day.
Yeah.
And they said they'd got like 2 chapters in and like given up.
Maybe you should do that too.
Well, apparently he has got he has got another book that's about becoming a teacher of presence. Which is apparently very... I haven't read that one yet, but it's apparently very applicable to being... You know, like getting kids to do like little bits of mindfulness and all that kind of stuff in the woods. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to have a chat about kind of the importance and the benefits of... I guess they are structured games, aren't they? Compared to... Because I guess there's very child-led games where they have completely made it up and... There are 900,000 rules which they have to explain to you in detail.
Yeah.
And then there's the other end where you arrive with, guys, I've got a game. This is how the game works.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to play?
Yeah. So examples of games like that we would play regularly are 1, 2, 3, Where Are You? Which is hide and seek, except that when the seeker is ready to find, they sing 1, 2, 3, Where Are You? And all the hiders sing 1, 2, 3, I'm here. So that's one.
That one's particularly good for like toddlers.
Yes.
Older kids are not so much into it.
But you made an adaptation to it, didn't you? About 1, 2, 3, 4, Let Me Hear Your Tiger Roar, which I always am surprised by how well it goes down with even quite grown up children and adults.
Yeah.
I think because
it's less self conscious because there's not singing in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone likes being a tiger.
Yeah.
And hunters and rabbits we play
a
lot, don't we?
One,
with the tails, so you have a tail in your pocket or in your waistband, and when you get caught, you put it around your head like Rambo and become a hunter, and okay, which is a bit like tag rugby, I think. And hide and seek, sardines.
Yeah, I guess it broadly there's hunting and finding games, aren't there?
Yeah.
And then
tracking
games, and then. I guess there's another element which is like scavengering games.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of like, oh, everybody's got to find something green. You know, we use the Go Find It cards.
Yep.
And it's, you know, find something green, something bumpy, something bigger than your head, all those kind of games. That's like another, because almost the hunting, seeking games, the woods is just the setting that you're playing it in. You could equally play it in a playground, whereas the scavenger games make you look at the woods in a different way.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd say those are kind of the most...
Hey, Mr. Crocodile, play sometimes.
Yeah.
Again, that's another game. It's sort of very playgroundy.
But sometimes... So I think that's one of the things that I would say is a benefit of games, particularly for either new groups or new children to Forest School, is it's something to latch onto. So if you've come to what could be a very established group, it might look like a free-for-all because you turn up either as the child or as a parent of a toddler... And go, oh my word, what is going on? Sorry, Gemma's just put something on
her
hand. I've
just found a dragonfly wing or a damselfly wing on the ground. And it's not attached to the fly anymore, but it's all iridescent in the sunlight. It's amazing.
That is very
cool. Wow.
Sorry. So yeah, so it might look a little bit like a free-for-all. Because you go, oh my god, these kids are all so independent and they're all doing different things and... Oh, how do we relate to any of this?
But everybody understands the game,
Everybody
you know?
Understands
And especially
game.
If it is a game that they haven't played anywhere before, like 1, 2, 3, Where Are You?
Mm-hmm.
Then everyone's sort of on the same page, and they're very easy to latch onto.
Yeah.
We have had children here, haven't we, who have been not as confident, and that has been their anchor for a while. So a child that for months, every time they come, will go, come and play 1, 2, 3, Where Are You?
Yeah.
And they will hide in exactly the
safe.
Same place every time
and
will use the same vocabulary, the language of the game, and that's how they interact with other people because they've almost got a script then. And that becomes the springboard for them to then build relationships with the other children. And they move past that. It's like a security blanket.
Yeah, and then... The first times that they come in is try something else first. You know, they don't immediately ask to play the game. I think you can almost see them go, it's okay, because if this mud kitchen thing all falls through and they won't let me play the game, I know I can play 1, 2, 3, where
yeah.
are you?
Yeah.
But it takes a while to get confident enough to say, this is what it is.
Yeah. I quite like, a lot of the time parents tell us that the children have taken those games into other places as well. So we talked the other day, didn't we, about linking Forest School with other areas of children's lives.
Yeah.
And it is something that they can take away. They don't need any equipment for it. So 1, 2, 3, where are you being, you know, a prime example. It's just, you don't need anything but the little song and you can play it anywhere. And they've
play
been going
in the house,
yeah,
play
and they've
it.
Been teaching it to other people, and that's really nice.
Yeah. And I think it's probably worth mentioning that one of the interesting things about the games, particularly with, well, no, I guess it kind of is for younger children and for older children, is that for me there's often a thing about the game that isn't actually the purpose of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So Hunters and Rabbits, the one that's like tag rugby where you run around and then you try, you know, somebody's out to try and get you, I will quite often be the person that's going to count and let everybody hide, and will count incredibly slowly or will stop counting altogether, because although for them the game is, oh, I'm going to get caught, by not counting they're basically doing a little bit of mindfulness on their own. If they've picked a spot, they're hidden, they're, you know, they're in a very small place, so they've got to focus in on the leaves and all that stuff, and it gives them a bit of headspace. Knowing, you know, if you said to kids, oh, go and sit somewhere quietly on your own and look at the leaves,
be really still and quiet,
yeah,
and just see what happens, you know,
they wouldn't go for it at all. So the game is like, oh, we're playing Hunters and Rabbits, you've got to hide, you've got to be stealthy. And like, hunting and being stealthy is like, I would say, a universal theme of games. There's no culture in the world that hasn't come from a hunting, you know, stalking society, you know, where that's going to have been a primary skill that children and adults needed to have. So I think there's often like stuff going on under the learning,
yeah,
under the game,
yeah,
that is the actual learning. And sometimes you vocalise that more than others. I have said to, sometimes we're doing it with groups where the parents are here, I have vocalised and said,
yeah,
you know, this is why I'm not going to get them straight away, because otherwise there's definitely looks of like, you aren't going to get them. And that in particular can come across as if, almost as if you're like shirking or being lazy. You know, that adult joke of like, oh, kids go off and play hide and seek and then you go, oh right, we'll get them in a couple of hours. And it can come off like you're doing that if you don't vocalise like, this is why I'm doing it,
yeah.
I'm, you know, it's intentionally like this. And I think, and then there's a lot of benefit to the kids having a very basic game like Hunters and Rabbits, and being able, and not, and us not being so precious about it that we can't change it.
Yeah.
So giving them the freedom to, you know, the kids invent, you know, an extra character in the game. What was it? It was like, a, you know, there's
a
lumberjack who
yeah.
can cut, the rabbits can hide in trees, but then the lumberjack can cut the trees down, and giving them a chance to kind of play. It's a bit like a paint by numbers, isn't it? You're not doing anything freehand and making your own thing, but you go, here's the framework.
Yeah.
If you want to paint the faces green, not, you know,
yeah.
skin tone, then that's absolutely fine. Like,
yeah.
you know, so it's a little bit of that. What is it? It's not imitation. It's like innovation.
Yeah.
So slightly changing what they're doing.
Yeah. And that they don't need an adult in order to do it either. So sometimes
yeah.
children will come and say, can we play these games? Like, yeah, why don't you go for it? Like, ask and see if anyone wants to play. And then that's often where the innovation happens, that you see they're kind of playing.
They've got to sell it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult thing for children to go up and say, can I play with you, is often a very big thing. But if you've already got a premise
yeah.
with
yeah.
you, it's almost like you're bringing
what...
a piece of equipment and saying,
yeah.
do you want to play this? We don't need to explain it to each other.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't take hours of negotiation.
We know our roles, we know what we're supposed
yeah.
to do, and from there...
There's an agreed structure to it.
Yeah.
Although that doesn't stop some of them. So then there's that extra bit, isn't there, where some children have a developmental stage where they will really enjoy the rules and the explaining and the theory of why games work, and it's not so much, I mean, I used to see it when I was a teacher, you know, they'd spend, you'd have 15, 20 minutes for break time, and you would see them spend 15 of the 20 minutes explaining, this is here, and you're only allowed in here under these conditions, and I'm
allowed. Fly. And actually, no, I can't fly, but I can walk through walls. And
I can only fly if I've got my left shoe on my hand, and Sam's running sideways, and you know, and all this stuff that actually that's very interesting, isn't it? Of part of them developing autonomy is you can't take someone from here. An adult is making all the decisions in your life, and then dump them into a situation where you go, nobody is making any decisions in your life, and you. Those sort of, it's almost a guided, like, you can play the game you know we know how to play. Now it's, you know, it's on to you, and you can decide a little bit of it.
I said the other day to a group, right, let's play this. And nobody moved. And it was a really interesting moment. I don't think I've ever had that before, where literally nobody wanted to play this game that previously and usually they'd be like, yeah, brilliant, we are going to go and do some hiding. And it was a group that knows each other very well, and I know them very well, and it was nice that everyone felt comfortable enough to go, do you know what, no, I'm not in the mood. And I was like, okay, that's fine, let's just knock that on the head. And it's one of those moments sometimes where in a session
checks your ego.
Yeah, it really does check your ego. Especially if a group has said, oh, we want to do this next time, or someone's mentioned something, you go, okay, we'll probably do that. And then you get it ready, you get it out, and you're like, actually, that moment has completely passed. And you, as you say, having to let go of that thing and go, even though you've in your head you were going to do that today, that's what you were going to do because everyone wanted to do it. No, that is not what's happening. And you have to just stop for a minute and not think anything, and just empty your mind and really look at what everyone's doing. And assess the situation, see what does this group need right now? They needed to start each session with a game for the last few weeks.
Do they still need
And now they don't need that. Perhaps they need actually no input from me right now, and for me to just observe.
But knowing that, where they're at. Like we say to the kids, somebody saying they don't want to play with you is not a, they'll never want to play with you. So having it to, you know, like you're saying, monitoring and knowing, actually, they might want to come back to that. Yeah. This might be an exploration into what's it like if we don't start with a game.
Yeah.
And then they go, no, we do want a game actually now. Yeah. We're all at a bit of a loss, or, you know. Yeah. And that is the thing, isn't it? With any, when you're fully leaving it up to the kids, you've got no ownership of it. If you suggest a game, it's very difficult. It's difficult for children, and it is still difficult, I think, for some adults to separate. You suggesting, hey, does anybody want to play this game? And if they go no, they're not saying they don't like that. It's not you, you know, distancing like that game from it being about you, to it being actually no, we don't need that game right now. We're not interested. And I think that's where it's kind of difficult when you do games in toddler groups, because I know we say this a reasonable amount, but it does take parents a while to settle into. They don't have to do it. So you might go in a toddler group, oh, who wants to play hide and seek? And even if the kids are like, nah, the parents will go, come on, then, you know, Gemma's playing hide and seek. And then you've almost got to backpedal the other way and say to them, no, it's okay. If they don't want to, they don't have to. Like, I'm not going to go and do...
Yeah, and sometimes they want to observe first, don't they? They know what they want to watch and check it out and understand what it is, which we often take for granted.
Well, I think that's an advantage to there being two of us at our sessions, because not only can we model and let the kids observe, but we've always... It's a bit like, you know, when they say, like, oh, this is my best friend, she always plays with me. But if you and I go, if you go, oh, do you want to play hide and seek? And none of the kids move, but I get the feeling that they actually would like to play it eventually. You and I can just go and do it.
Yeah.
And just go, like, right, I'm going to count then, Gemma's going to hide. If you guys want to go off, that's fine. Me and Gemma are playing a game right now.
Yeah.
And they, and, you know, I'd say 70, 80% of the time, they then go, like, oh, cool, can I join in?
Yeah.
Whereas being a founder of a game is a very different thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it can be more difficult, because if you want to do something like going and climbing a particular tree, and you think the group will get something out of it, you can independently on your own go, I'm going to go and climb a tree.
Yeah.
And you can sort of go off, model that on your own. But if you go, I'm going to play hide and seek, you need a second person.
Yeah.
It's that reliance on somebody else.
Yeah.
That is very scary for kids.
Yeah.
Very, very scary, I think. And it's a big thing to put yourself out there.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about almost the reverse of that with maybe slightly older children, especially those with additional needs, that a game can be a bit of a saviour at some points. I was thinking about some of our groups where there might be that time in the day where everybody's maybe slightly tired or slightly fractious and nobody really wants to do the same thing. So someone might go, I want to do firelighting, and then, oh no, I want to do this, I want to get the knives out, and someone's go, oh no, I want to do this, and you can't meet all of those needs all at once, or something has happened socially, and that sometimes playing a game together where the rules are kind of agreed already and everyone knows what's expected of them is like, oh phew, we don't now have to negotiate our relationships, which were getting definitely a bit tricky at that time. We don't need to accommodate anybody, you know, anyone else's emotions or feelings right now, because we all have clearly defined roles and we know what to do and we can have a laugh together. Mm. And it almost, even though there's more structure, it somehow relaxes everybody. Yeah.
Well, there's less decisions, isn't there? Yeah. There's decision fatigue sets in to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's actually made me think that there's another element of when you sort of deciding which games or if a group need a game that we haven't really talked about, which is the idea of everybody against a game or competitive games, and some groups will really like a game, you know, that's competitive, and we'll go, oh, it's two teams and we're going to do this, and some groups you've got to socially navigate and go, I think that, you know, and we've got some groups here where I go, you haven't got the emotional development yet to park your feelings about a game when it stops or when it's going in a direction that we don't like. And
I'd say we probably play few games where there are winners and losers. I think that's not, I don't know. And I found out the other day that before the age of 7, children cannot grasp or deal with the idea of winning and losing developmentally, I heard this week. So that reaction that some children have of losing and absolutely, you know, it being the end of their universe right now is absolutely and totally normal. And the way that some people approach that is to go, oh, you know, they really need to learn to lose, so we should do this more. Mm. We should like put them in that
exposure
situation more.
Therapy.
And actually that's not true, because they just can't developmentally grasp it. So actually it's better to park that. And obviously some children will be able to deal with it younger than 7. It's completely fluid in that way. But I thought that was quite an interesting thing. I was like, oh yeah, actually. So those board games or card games that we like to play with quite little children, maybe we should be parking those for a bit.
Or reframing them so that it's, you know, just an experience, and we did it for a bit and then we stopped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I felt something. Mm. I was involved in it. I was part of a movement of people doing something together. That's the important thing, isn't it?
Well, so we do... we do have one game, don't we, that's like a video game imitation
like
thing.
Yeah.
Quite often we'll just go, if we've got a group that would like to play that but aren't ready to do two teams and compete and do whatever, then you can quite easily reframe that, can't you? It's like high score. Because then it's all, you know, you have always achieved something, because you've got more points on the board than you did at the start.
Well, you can try and, you know, there was a team here the other day and they got 200 points. I wonder if we can get more than 200 points or, work together. Yeah. I was just thinking about that adult day that we did where we played Hunters and Rabbits with adults.
Mm.
And sometimes we do teach training days here where we're talking about Forest School all day. And that's one thing. That's, and, you know, their teachers or TAs or whatever.
Yeah.
But we had a team building day, a bunch of people who weren't teachers or anything to do with Forest School. And it was completely fascinating to see them and listen to them talking about playing Hunters and Rabbits, because as adults, if you don't work with children, the times you play a team, you know, not a team game, but a game, you know, a physical game together.
And actually, Hunters and Rabbits, as a game, is almost that extra level of primalness. If it's hide and seek and you get spotted, you can be spotted from a big distance. But that idea that somebody is going to chase you, like chasing is something that for a lot of adults, they don't get chased. You don't get chased,
and
do
quite
you?
A lot of, I know, and there's quite a lot of anxiety around that. But then when they do it, that anxiety kind of explodes into like joy. It's really, it's like a release of tension. It's really interesting. And just the laughter that you hear, like people absolutely laughing their heads off. It's hilarious.
And that's, that's kind of the thing, isn't it, for lots of children, is running and chase games are staples. Because, well, A, they're easy to understand, but also there is an immediate thrill of, I'm being chased, I'm gonna, I've got to do this. And especially with children who, you know, children are never, you know, until you're like, what are you, 21, you are still a slightly different height, weight, its level of coordination than you were yesterday. So that it might sometimes seem like, oh, you know, they play that game, they play that tag game over and over and over and over again. But you're like, right, but yesterday he wasn't as coordinated as he is today.
Or as fast. And, and it's today he can beat that other person.
And maybe that's the, you know, and sort of physically testing yourself against others in a very simple format of just which of our bodies can move faster is, you know, endlessly, I guess, engaging and valuable. So, yeah. I don't think I've got much more to add about games.
I don't think I have either. Games are good.
Games are good.
Play games.
As long as you, as long as you don't feel like you have to.
No, yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it?
I like expanding the repertoire of games as well.
Yes.
So if anybody has got any good games that we haven't talked about, let us know.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Bye.